Technorama for Monday, August 19th, 2013. Dog Days of Podcasting, the Silicon Road continues. I had some other thing for a Silicon Road. Now I can't remember what it was. I'll remember it later. So, as promised, this was the end of my college years. I proposed to Donna. I graduated college. And I'm offered a job. Actually, I was offered the job before I graduated. So I really didn't have the full motivation to pass those exams knowing I had a job in my hand. So I started in early 88 at my former company. Actually, it was one of the three subsidiaries of my former company. There was manufacturing, engineering, and the part that sold privately owned paid telephones that one of the founders bought on to take it a little bit down the history, when AT&T was divested, it made it possible for people to own privately paid telephones. You didn't have to be AT&T, but you did still have to pay state tariffs and whatnot. So this branch of the organization made telephones. They made paid telephones. They called it, God forbid, the smartphone. And the smartphone, too, had already been a product that was out in production. And they were looking to, I can't remember my generations. I think I was brought in to make the smartphone too. Had an LCD display on it. It looked like a regular pay telephone hanging there on the wall. It was fully programmable and you could access it through a PC. And it would call back to a central office. So they were upgrading the product from like a 300 baud modem and the PC software that was running compiled BASIC. I was brought in to rewrite the PC software while another engineer was redoing the software on the system itself and some of the hardware. So I was rewriting the PC software in C on DOS. I think it was Microsoft C compiler version 5, later 5.1, and then 6. And Scott Reynolds was still in Marquette, Michigan, and he was helping me with some of the assembly routines to do the serial I/O communications that he was doing for another project. So I was pretty happy with this. I moved to Appleton in January of 1988 with $64 to my name and about a $2,000 debt to my dad for my car. Very humble beginnings. I feel like one of those immigrant stories, but it's not. I brought the BBS software with me, the DOS version, because by this time, Scott had the Unix version pretty mature and sort of orphaned the DOS software. So I said, well, I'll keep it running. I think I can buy a PC and run it out of my... I was living in my brother's duplex at the time with him for about the first 9-10 months till Donna and I got married and found our own apartment. And it originally ran on an IBM PS2 Model 30. This comes in handy again as my hobby influences my career in a little bit. I'll tell you about that. I later, like a year or two later, purchased a version of SCO Xenix and a whole bunch of unsupported hardware. I don't know what compelled me to do this. It was supported by the operating system, but it wasn't supported by the manufacturer or something. Whatever it was. Things like the network adapter. They only supported a Ungerman Bass network adapter under SCO Xenix with the right drivers. I don't think they supported any SCSI controllers, but hey, I found a microchannel controller, the Adaptec AHA1640, I believe it was, and purchased a SCSI drive. And I think I had about $3,000 sunk into the machine and operating system, and another $2,000 or $3,000 sunk into a 300 meg SCSI drive and SCSI controller and a DigiBoard 8-port dumb serial card. So the SCSI controller and the DigiBoard weren't truly supported, but they ran. Again, this is something that I've loved doing, making things run that maybe shouldn't run, and interfacing, here we go again, right? Just like the college days, making things run, programming them up. And Scott got me a copy of the Unix software, and we got it working on SCO Xenix, which wasn't too difficult from the IBM Xenix, actually, if I remember right. I found a couple of terminals, and I had set it up here. I also found the local PC user group. The Fox Valley Technical College had a PC user group going at the time. Another community of interest. So they formed a telecom SIG. I was the telecom SIG leader, all around modems and BBSs and things. I wrote a few articles for their monthly newsletter here and there, did a few presentations for them. Sounds familiar, as you'll hear later on. This is a recurring theme, right? I like to learn something and then share it. And again, being in front of people and showing them what you know and even learning from them in a reciprocating means can really do wonders for your career. So don't shortchange yourself when it comes to finding opportunities and joining communities of interest, that kind of thing. I hosted the telecom SIG at my house, which was kind of fun because I had it's in this very room where I'm sitting in. That's now the studio. I can still look down and see this six phone jack thing on my wall that would host a number of phone lines. I think I was eventually up to 7 phone lines in this house at one point. 4. Oh, anyway. And a bunch of terminals hooked into the spare ports that weren't running modems, the spare serial ports. I had like a Bull terminal. I had an AT&T terminal. I had a Wyze terminal. I had an actual VT100. Maybe it was a 101. A VT220. And, you know, these were very easy to make run on a Unix system. And I hosted this out of my house, and people would come over once a month for the telecom SIG. I started my career down here in Appleton as a software engineer for my former company. I programmed in C, as I mentioned, that was writing PC software. And this was a great project. Taught me a lot. Actually, I think I learned a lot the hard way. This one application had serial communications. It would call these phones. Phones would call it. Database stuff. So I had to download state tariffs from floppy drives, and then the telephone owner could set their own rates. They would upload them to the phone. Crazy bit patterns that were going on in the phone format to optimize, not byte by byte, but nibble by nibble, a half byte, 4 bits at a time. How you set some of these things up, and some were reversed in low-high format, and some were high-low, and it was crazy, crazy stuff. Anyway, for Scott's help, I may have mentioned this, I apologize if this is a repeat, I paid him out of my own pocket. I would go up and say, hey, you were such a big help, here's $100. And I wasn't making a whole lot at the time, so that was a huge, huge help out of my paycheck every couple of weeks to keep him on the back burner, so to speak. Because he does come back, I think, in the next episode. So anyway, the BBS was a lot of fun. And I worked for about 18 months, 2 years on that project. Then, as the payphone project was starting to die off, and then we were looking at selling that subsidiary of the company, they were bringing in some Unix systems. And they said, hey, does anybody know someone with Unix skills? One of the project managers or something said this. And you know, I raised my hand and said, yeah, I actually run a bulletin board run on Unix out of my apartment. Was it the apartment back then? Must have been the apartment because we didn't own a house until 91. I went nowhere. I was still in the basement of the technology center, and I'm still in the basement of the technology center. But I transferred laterally organizationally. So I became the first system administrator for the engineering group, supporting some systems they were bringing in. They flew me out to Beaverton, Oregon to learn about this ECAD system. It was an integrated system on Apollos. I don't know if you're old enough to remember Apollos. Apollo was eventually bought by HP, and they had 68,000 processors in them, running a Unix-like system, very interesting operating system, called Domain OS. And we used Apollo Token Ring, which meant you had to pull a lot of cables, but there were no switches, there were no routers. It was just, it was all easy stuff to do within the same building. So learned all about that. They also sent me down to Chicago, to Naperville, where I learned all about HP UX administration. This was all in a couple of weeks, in early 80, or late 89, I think it was. I think I originally learned HP UX 6.2, and we upgraded to 6.5. My domain OS was 10.1. Thank God I never had to learn about OS. 9.7. As I understand, that was pretty brutal, but a lot of things were cleaned up in 10. That made it a lot nicer. I did a lot of cartridge tape slinging for backups, for loading software. There was one point where an operating system upgrade would take all night. I still think about that because I had to do a full system backup to cartridge tape, load all the HP cartridge tapes to go from 6.2 to 6.5, or maybe it was 6.5 to 7.0, and there were like 11 of these tapes, 300 meg each, or 60 meg, whatever it was. The OS was on 1 or 3 or 4, and then the compilers and all the libraries and all the software, and it was just obnoxious. And then you had to do a restore of all your data, because for some reason, between one of these two versions of the operating system, they wanted to reformat the hard drive. So it was an all-night process. And I laugh when you can push a button on your phone and do an operating system upgrade that's many, many, many times larger, and it's done in a few minutes. You're running the latest operating system. There's no pain, there's no suffering. Well, most of the time, there's no pain, there's no suffering. But I also learned something about backups, a couple of somethings. I love the phrase that I saw on the internet years and years ago. It says, there's two types of people in this world. Those who have lost data and those who will. And I was one of those people who have lost data and learned it the hard way, because I thought my backups were running fine and they really weren't. And it cost about 2 months of engineering effort. There's another one where I lost about $250,000 worth of test development effort. So I became the backup guy for a number of years. So if you really need a good tape monkey, that's the way to do it. Fortunately, it was still, both of those were still fairly new. That I didn't lose my job, but it was definitely not a bright spot on my career. It's one of those questions when you get interviewed and they say, you know, tell me about the time something went wrong. That's the one I pull out, is one of those two instances where the HP UX backups went horribly wrong, or I did not validate the domain OS backups and thought they were going right, and then when I needed them, they were not right. So I also had a very early documented CMDB, or Configuration Management Database, as ITIL now calls it. If you're familiar with IT processes, you'll know what the CMDB is. I had a three-ring binder that I maintained a document of all the computers and all the maintenance done to them, the revisions of operating system. It was a document, an electronic document, but I printed it out so that I could carry it around with me. And then as I did maintenance, like processor upgrades or RAM upgrades or something, I could just jot it in this note and then later go update the electronic document. So I don't know if it was ahead of my time, but again, it was one of those things that was born out of necessity. Like, how am I going to keep track of what machines have what on them? And this type of thing, this is another one of those things, like writing articles for the communities that I belong to, like teaching. Oh, I forgot to mention, I also taught a C programming course back in the early 90s. At the local technical college. I was an on-call staff instructor, whatever they called it. I would do like Tuesday and Thursday nights. Still have some friends from that, much like I still have some friends from the old bulletin board days that, you know, come up to me and remember this from 20 years ago or more, that, you know, hey, I was in your C class. I'm like, oh, wow. You know, and I think, I don't feel that old. I'm not that old, but apparently this stuff does kind of creep up with you. And then around 1995, I found that the expenses for the bulletin board were rising, and it was time to make a decision, because I was paying $50 a month for a dial-up connection to a local ISP and only getting about $30 a month in membership fees from the members that would call in. My hard drives were starting to fill up. News feeds were getting bigger. And it was time to say, do I want to be an internet service provider or shut it down? And it was sad, because it was a good community, a lot of good people. And I knew that it was going to be a lot of work, but I also knew that the internet was going to be huge. You know, think about 93, 94, 95, a lot of people getting online. Not much in the way of dial-up. The ease of getting on the internet really wasn't there, at least in this area, until the late 90s. I think Time Warner Cable finally offered internet to the home, broadband connections, that kind of thing, DSL, 98, 99, and this was 95, so still a few years away, but I opted to shut it down, and, you know, it was a tough decision. A lot of people liked the Enterprise, and I had thought that I could get it up and running again. The final machine that I had down here was like a 486DX, home-built kind of thing, made out of parts. Seems to be a recurring theme. But that was in the build-it-yourself computer days. I guess a lot of people still do that, but not as many as used to maybe 15, 20 years ago. And it was running NetBSD. I don't even remember the version. It was an early version. But that was the same thing Scott was running his on, so I figured, why not? And it was pretty rock solid. And I had thought that maybe there's an opportunity to set up a VM somewhere and run that software again. But I found the old tape archives and I actually did a couple of restores of various versions of the Enterprise software. What did we call it? Starbase. The software itself was called Starbase, and then the Unix one was Starbase 2. But I could not remember how to configure the darn thing. We just didn't have any documentation. Whereas the DOS software had lots of documentation. We actually wrote a pretty decent reference manual for that, but they were too far different. The only thing that was the same was like the command structure for the user interface, but configuring it, I couldn't remember what RC file went where and did what and all that kind of stuff. So this one's running a little long. I'm going to come back next time and tell you how Scott comes back into the picture. He was no longer up in Marquette, Michigan. I got a hook on that guy, and I brought him to Appleton, where he still is today. I'll tell you that story next time. You can find me at ChuckTomasi.com or other podcasts at ChuckChat.com. Till next time, 101.